everyone. I'm Erica, staff writer for NMP. Today we have the writer behind Our Trigger Leads Harmful, Prove It, Katie Jensen, who's ready to tell us about how this controversial article came to be and what people's reactions have been since it was published. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
Angel AI delivers finance on demand. Get decisions on complex real estate financing scenarios with a simple chat message. No more delays or surprises. Just finance on demand at angelai.com.
Thanks, Katie, for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Erica. I'm really excited to talk about this piece. I think it's really different compared to everything else I've written, mainly because it's a piece that I knew would probably anger some people, but would need to be written anyways. And I think that just kind of reflects our duty to tell readers the facts despite how it makes them feel. So I'm excited to share how my research really led me into an entirely different direction for this piece. Originally, I was doing a story on trigger leads because, as you know, it's a hot topic. A lot of legislation was coming out about limiting the practice. We have legislators, originators, trade associations, everyone making claims that, you know, either they're dangerous to consumers or they allow for more competition in the market. So I started working on a story about investigating how trigger leads could be harmful to consumers. But upon my research, I literally could not find any hard data about the topic. You will not find, you know, surveys, studies, any sort of type of analysis on trigger leads out there publicly available. And that, I think, uncovered an even greater problem.
I'm sure originators know what trigger leads are, but Katie, can you explain what it means to use trigger leads as an LO and what consumers experience when they receive a call?
Sure. So just to kind of go over, trigger leads are created and sold by the three national credit bureaus, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. So whenever a consumer attempts to get a loan, and it doesn't even have to be a mortgage, it's any loan, and the lender runs a hard credit check, that essentially creates the trigger lead. So basically, when that happens, the credit bureaus collect the consumer's information, compile it into a list with others, and then sell that information as a trigger lead to marketers and lenders. And that is how they get them. So when companies like brokerages, you know, retail lenders, anyone, banks, when they buy trigger leads, they're buying them essentially in a pool. And it was interesting to find out what the experience is with originators, because typically I'm like, how much information is sold through this trigger lead? Most of the time, if it's a cheaper one, it's just their name or a phone number. Sometimes it's just a phone number. So you can imagine, like, you're the originator getting the trigger lead and you're supposed to call this number, but you don't even know the person's name. You got to be able to convince them that you are trustworthy enough to do their mortgage. So I know that a lot of people, using trigger leads is a bit taboo. Even a lot of people who use them wouldn't want to admit that, because there's a lot of pride around self-generating your leads and being self-sufficient in that way. So using trigger leads generally in the industry is seen as kind of like a cheat, you know? People aren't always willing to admit that they use them. Sometimes they use them, or they started out using them for a little bit until they were able to kind of build up a network. It does take, but I will say it does take a little bit of skill to sell over the phone, right, to somebody. But there are tactics that they can use. Some are better. Some are definitely questionable. And on the consumer behalf, what they experience, essentially, from what I've been told from originators, is a bombardment of phone calls. I had someone, Samuel Royer, actually send me, he got permission from his borrower to send a screenshot of all the phone calls that she got within just a few hours. And it was like nearly 100
wow.
phone calls from spammers. Yeah. And like you could get spam calls, you could get actual lenders on the phone. The other side to this is that the consumer gets a phone call from a lender saying, I can give you a better rate than what you have right now. And that actually ends up happening sometimes. It's not completely unheard of. And I think it's not right to say that that's not true, because otherwise it wouldn't be so effective. Why would people be buying this?
Sure. So, Katie, how did the story end up changing from when you first started researching to the final version being published online? You said you uncovered a greater problem?
Right. So I went about this under the assumption that there are ways that this is harmful to consumers. It's not, you know, it doesn't take much stretch of the imagination to assume that consumers don't like being bombarded with calls. But I wanted to find, you know, at what scale is this happening? Is this happening to most consumers? Does that encompass a lot of their experiences? Is there another side to this? Is it actually beneficial to anyone? And should I be representing their side as well? So I needed some data to kind of help me along. But on that journey, I found that there is no empirical evidence supporting the fact that most consumers believe trigger leads are harmful, that that is encompasses most of their experiences, nor is there any evidence to support that it's mostly beneficial and that encompasses most of their experiences. We actually have no idea how consumers feel as a collective, how consumers feel about trigger leads. I can get so many anecdotes from originators that I interview, right? We have sources and we talk to them and they could tell me my borrower thinks this, my borrower thinks that. And yeah, I mean, I obviously talk to people who've used trigger leads, who are adamantly against trigger leads. And it's just a complete mix of experiences for them. So anecdotes, that's the reason why anecdotes don't really lead you anywhere. It's not reliable evidence. It's not conclusive evidence. Doesn't mean those stories are invalid. All of those stories could be true. It's just not getting us anywhere in terms of finding out how consumers feel about this. So I dug a bit deeper. When I went on to the consumer complaint database for the CFPB, there was a lackluster amount of complaints regarding trigger leads. And I don't know, I can't say that's necessarily because people aren't complaining. They just don't have a proper outlet to complain. The CFPB does not provide consumers a proper outlet where they can complain specifically about trigger leads. It's the only obvious repository where consumers can file complaints about this. But they happen to be scattered among a wide variety of categories and subcategories, making it very hard for them to navigate. Like, if you're a consumer and going to file a complaint, that must be incredibly frustrating. Not even the agency. I talked to a spokesperson for the agency who didn't even know how to search their own database for trigger lead complaints. And whenever I went about, you know, interviewing association leaders, originators, I would ask, have you ever seen a study, you know, a greater study or conducted a survey, came across anything like that, that would, you know, help me find empirical evidence to support your standpoint, whatever that is. And none of them had it. None of them. So, of course, there's agencies that are supposed to oversee the NCRAs. The NCRAs don't have consumer complaint databases. They didn't provide any information regarding trigger leads. I spoke with the FTC, the CDIA, all three national credit bureaus. None of them were able to provide me any empirical evidence. They don't do any analysis about consumer complaints regarding trigger leads. I contacted the legislators who proposed the bills to Congress. None of them have shown any empirical evidence to support their standpoint. And when I asked for it, none of them were able to provide it. So this made me realize a few things, right? There's no proper outlet, like I said, for consumers to complain about trigger leads. The NCRAs and the agencies meant to oversee them do not know how consumers are affected by trigger leads. And after pointing that out to them, only one spokesperson from an association called the Consumer Federation of America showed interest in looking into that when I brought it up.
Wow. It almost makes me think, Katie, that consumers aren't even aware of the fact that the credit bureaus sell their information.
I'm sure they're not. I'm sure, you know, they might call up their originator and be like, why am I, a lot of them actually, the originators who have had borrowers complain about this or bring it up with them, they think their originator leaked their number. Wow. Yeah. So there, it can be a bit of a tussle, like, you know, like explaining to them this is what trigger leads are. This is how this works. It's because I did a hard credit pull. There are also issues when you decide to, there's an option for consumers to opt out of trigger leads, right? But there's a delay with that. I've gotten a lot of reviews from originators saying, yeah, I signed my consumer up for that, or I told my consumer to do that, and they did. And they're still somehow getting calls. So like a bombardment of calls. So, I mean, the reliability of the DNC list is, you know, it's questionable. But I have heard people say, you know, you should allow consumers to opt in rather than opt out of getting these calls. And a number of changes that could maybe be helpful. But of course, we would need some hard data in order to make a convincing argument to enforce any sort of change. That's what you would expect if you were going to testify before legislators saying, we need to make this change happen. You can't just rely on anecdotes and be like, well, five of my borrowers, or however many of my borrowers, well, what about consumers? You know, this is what surveys are for. This is what studies are done for. And I know that the MBA, I know that a number of other associations have a database of consumers they can reach out to, and they haven't.
I mean, what consumer wouldn't want the option to have a better deal, but maybe it's not proposed that way. Maybe it's, you know, do you want to be cold called 20 times? Who knows? Katie, what do you think motivates trade associations representing originators to publicly oppose trigger leads to the degree that they have? What are the potential consequences if what they claim isn't actually true?
Right. I mean, I can't really speak on why they would choose to do that. I could say that, you know, when I started out, I assumed there must be some sort of evidence backing this thing. And I think that's what they're assuming. And I think they're kind of stuck in this echo chamber. And I think my interview with Valerie Saunders was very telling. When I asked her, you know, how big of a problem is this? Because they're claiming that, you know, trigger leads are harmful to consumers. And she said in the interview, it's an overwhelming majority who are against trigger leads. And so I'm like, well, she must have some number in mind. What's an overwhelming majority? And she could not give me a number. She could not, you know, tell me how many consumers, you know, believe in this, are against trigger leads. She also didn't have any sources for empirical evidence. So when I asked how she came about that assumption, she said, well, it's a, quote, a common dialogue. So people talking to each other, like I said, sharing anecdotes, talking to your friends. And I think that may lead to an echo chamber, right? Where you're just kind of, you're with people who share the same opinions as you. As you talk about this thing, you're kind of confirming and validating each other's ideas without hearing the other side. So she didn't tell me exactly who she was talking to. She said other trade associations, but I know who she didn't talk to. So I asked her, how many members are in support of this? Many. And so I go, did you take a vote? No. She did not ask her own members whether or not they support legislation limiting the practice of using trigger leads. I asked her, do you know if any members in your association might rely on trigger leads? And people could potentially rely on trigger leads for a number of reasons, right? You're new to the industry, you need your first paycheck, and then, you know, eventually you'll grow your network. Or maybe it's just a really tough market and you don't really know how to cope with that right now. So you're using trigger leads as like crutch for yourself and your business. Or maybe you've always relied on trigger leads. It's just kind of a cycle. So, you know, and whether or not, however you feel about that, that means if you're going to limit the practice, that is going to significantly affect their business. If they are relying on it, then you can expect them to go out of business if you take that away from them. And maybe trigger leads are wrong. Like, I know there's people that think that, but is it also right if the association representing you puts you out of business? That's the association. NAM, AIM, the MBA, they're representing the voices of the industry. They're representing, at the very least, just their own members. And they didn't ask their own members if anyone is relying on trigger leads to help their business and to survive. And I find that particularly shocking. And then when we look at a greater scale of the consequences of that, okay, so we go ahead and we limit trigger leads. We pass some legislation nearly banning the practice, right? You know, some pieces of legislation are more strict than others, but we go ahead and do that. How many people in the next day are going to lose their jobs? How many, you know, businesses are going to shutter because of this? And can you then say, look at everyone, look at the members of your association and say, I did what was best for you? I don't know. But I mean, that's just something to think about, right? I don't know exactly why they would choose to do that. I think it's just kind of, again, just an echo chamber and just people kind of reaffirming their thoughts and making a number of assumptions, but we actually don't know that's true.
Katie, I know you had a pretty big response to the article. Why was that so controversial?
Right. Because, I mean, on this, and I knew it kind of would be, because on the surface, it's really just, it's not an op-ed. I'm not taking anybody's side. You can say trigger leads are the next best thing, or you can just say, you know, trigger leads are awful. That's okay. I'm okay. It's really just to say no one has evidence. So I think I knew it would make people angry because I'm not supporting anyone. I'm not siding with anyone. The article doesn't do that. It just pokes holes in everybody's argument because I'm saying you don't have evidence. It's not there. And I don't mean to make, you know, people angry, of course, you know. If that's how they react, then that's how they react. But I think, you know, the concerning thing is what they should do is they should look at the agencies in charge and say, what's going on? Why isn't no one overseeing this? Why, you know, and it, especially if we believe this is such a huge issue and you want to talk to legislators about it, I would hope that you would have some empirical evidence to back your stance. If you're changing the status quo, whether it's I want consumers to opt in rather than opt out, or I want to limit the practice in this way, you need to make your point. And, you know, the burden is on you. So you need to prove to me that consumers are against this. You need to prove all of your claims that this is dangerous, this is bad for the industry, whatever it is, in order to make your point.
Otherwise, it's just folklore or a legend at this point. So, I mean, do you think that someone will soon try to gather some empirical evidence on this? Where are we at in that process?
Yeah. I mean, that is what I hope would happen. At least one person to, I mean, you could be angry. You could be like, what the heck? Like, I know they're bad. I'm convinced that they're bad. Okay, just go get a survey. I mean, we don't have a database of consumers that we can reach out to. They have that. They have that at the ready. Every single lender and brokerage has a database of consumers that they can reach out to. I know that they send marketing emails out to their consumers all the time, right? To just kind of keep in touch, see what's going on. I can't imagine it's that hard to put out a survey in one of those emails and just say, hey, did you ever get any calls while you were applying for your loan? Was that beneficial to you in any way? Or do you think that was harmful to you? That's just one question you could ask. And that would be very, very telling. And nobody has done that.
Did you get a better deal?
Did you get a better deal from somebody else? Did anyone make an offer to you? Did you find that, you know, annoying? If not harmful, like they didn't get, you know, hacked or scammed or anything. You find that very, very annoying and off-putting. You know, because it's there supposedly to help you. And if it's not doing that, then you should say something. And you exactly. would then be giving them, consumers, finally, a proper outlet to complain, which, again, as we said, you know, the agencies are not doing themselves.
So sounds like, Katie, we're really making a call out for these associations or somebody to make a survey and get consumers' real opinions on this.
Exactly. And you know, I don't want people to overcomplicate it saying, I don't, how am I supposed to know what all consumers think? Well, that's not what surveys are for, right? You know, get a proper sample size. You know, again, as we said, you have a database full of consumers, or maybe you don't want to reach back out to them and bother them. Maybe you could just include it in your interactions with borrowers moving forward and just try to gather some evidence and see if your point is right. Because if you don't do that, it just kind of seems like you're afraid of what you might find.
Very true. Do you think that you're going to pursue another article on trigger leads in the future? If so, what will prompt that?
Oh, I'm sure we will, because it's just a hot topic, you know. AIM recently, the new chairman of AIM, of course, there was an issue with him using trigger leads and then him making the promise, oh, well, I won't take your clients. You know, if you're an AIM member, I'll give you that special privilege, which is, you know, interesting. So trigger leads is always going to be a hot topic. I'm sure new pieces of legislation will come out, new announcements for support. Maybe a survey. That's what I was going to say. Hopefully a survey of some sort. Someone will come out with empirical evidence kind of showing how consumers feel, how originators feel, who's relying on this. Do we need them? That sort of thing. But yeah, I'm sure that we'll be writing about this for a long time. It's been a hot topic for a long time.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your continuing coverage on trigger leads, Katie. And that's all for this episode of Editor's Cut. If you've been captivated by the untold details we've uncovered today, make sure to leave a review and remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Your feedback keeps us fueled to bring you more behind-the-scenes insights and forgotten gems in the world of storytelling. Head on over to nationalmortgageprofessional.com for more stories like the one you heard today.